girl tell me the other day this. She said,
today we're talking with Dennis Culleton, and he really gets into the intricacies of managing crises. But I think it's interesting to understand why these crises bubble up so fast.
They're on a hair trigger.
Yeah.
They're
and it's not just the technology.
That's right.
It's the people
That's
behind
right.
the technology.
It's a zeitgeist. It's a psychology.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's not going away.
We live in a tinderbox.
And I don't think, personally, that people today are any different than people have ever been. I think social media didn't transform us. It revealed us. And it allowed what was dialogue around the kitchen table turn into movements. And that's why we see a lot of what we see happening so fast in social media today. And that is obviously showing itself in politics today. It's also showing itself more and more frequently for brands and companies. But the idea is that a brand, this underscores the reason why we talk about authenticity or purpose or any of those things. And that is if a consumer suspects any hint of deviation from what you are supposed to be, they will out you for it.
That's right.
Does this come from some sort of like angry place, or does it come from a place of justice?
I mean, your hypothesis is that it's being revealed, or it's a transparency. It's saying this thing can now be activated. We can now know it to be true. But really, it's a democratization. And I know you've written and spoken a lot about the historical transformation of brands from sort of on an ivory tower in a monolithic way, projecting their values and images onto an awaiting population. And the democratization of that has given everybody a voice, and therefore everybody some sort of fractional power to make a comment on what's happening. And to me, I think the optimistic point of view would be we're just learning how to have power across the broad democratic landscape, and maybe we'll get better at it, and we won't be so maniacally
savage.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
You know, I think it comes from a pent-up need for justice. I really do. I think this idea of generations of being, you know, not responded to by companies.
Spoken at.
Exactly. Consumer.
Yes.
A consumer is
It's a pretty narrow lane.
Well, and it's receptive.
Yes.
You're not choosing to consume. You are being fed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And really, when you think about the years and years of organizational mistrust and victimization, whether it's financial or government or pharma, the church, Wall Street, it just goes on and on, where people, I think, for so long have just come to passively believe that they just can't fight the system.
And is it fair to say we're in the age of the hawks?
Well, we are in the age of the hawks. And now 50 years of generational momentum has hit the fan.
Yeah.
Because people are done, and now they can start movements instantly.
Right. So whether you're seeing these nano or micro crises at a brand level, or, you know, some commercial episode, which we could talk about at length, vice like a Buffalo Wild Wings and what happened to them in the context of the recent Astros blow up, or you look at our political landscape and the emergence of Bernie on the left and the persistence of Mr. Trump on the right. Both, you could say, are phenomena of the hawks.
I would absolutely believe those
saying
are phenomena.
Saying enough of you, Mr. Status Quo.
Yeah.
We are rising up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the polarities in this that mirror what we're seeing in the branding culture.
And so there's some appetite for dignity, right? There's some appetite for respect that's saying, I need to exert whatever I can to grab back some of that power that I feel was denied me over the waning days of the legacy brand, you know, monolithic blaring mechanisms.
Right, right. And we see it. We see it everywhere.
And it's very emotional. It's very gut. It starts at the gut, yeah. And then it comes out.
Well, now you're talking my language. Everything in marketing is emotional. And I think when we look at what's happening today, there's a lot of practices and thoughts we can think about managing them.
Dennis has a lot of very, you know, present day urgent things, I think, to address here.
Yeah, I think he's got some good tips for us in managing this, knowing it's going nowhere. All right, let's listen to the show.
Sounds good.
Welcome to the Free Range. We're in a world where one single tweet or posted image can take down a company. Transparency has changed the world we live in, especially for business leaders. Gone are the days of any customer complaint getting buried in the customer service black hole. Now it's front and center for the world to see and a force to be reckoned with for even the smallest entrepreneur. Today, we're talking with Dennis Culleton, the man you want to call when issues or crises emerge. For 25 years, Dennis has been helping executives and business leaders, high-profile sports figures, and even major sports teams manage their public perception and move quickly when the worst happens. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Nicole.
So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your firm and what you do?
So my elevator pitch, which my partner always rolls her eyes when she hears me say this, but I won't market your new iPhone, but if it catches on fire, I'm your guy.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's kind of today's climate where, and always on social media, you know, it's not like something's going to be brewing for a long time before you have to mobilize, right? So when there's a post out there that, you know, a big company or a small company sees, how do you know the difference between something significant and something insignificant? Like, how do you know when it's just a disgruntled consumer post or the beginning of a storm?
Well, that's a great question. I think it takes some real judgment and perception on the very front end. I know this is, you know, in this day and age, sort of a old example because it happened a couple of years ago, but United Airlines started with their problem where they dragged a passenger off a plane, called the local airport security at O'Hare to drag a passenger off a plane, leaving the passenger bloodied, many of the passengers traumatized.
Right.
And the initial response was to sort of robotically, out of the United handbook, have some very passive language apologizing for having to change the passenger schedule. I mean, the actual phrasing was even worse than that. Well, that was a lack of initial sensitivity on the front end. So it really takes having a real good pulse for who your customers are and what you stand for.
And actually, you know, things are just being rearranged. Customer service used to be the last thing any company would think about. And also what's really emerging now is corporate culture. And what you're talking about is, are we a type of company? How do we behave as a company? And really institutionalizing that as a preventative measure that I think some people may not even think about, or some leaders may not think about, as a preventative measure to so these types of incidences don't even happen.
I mean, you hear a lot about brands that empower their frontline employees to do something about it.
Right.
The after-action report from pundits, and it's always easier to do an after-action report than to handle things in real time, believe me. But in places like the Wall Street Journal, there were observations in the United case that the whole culture of the company was a very by-the-book approach. And that works probably most of the time when your main mission is making sure passengers get on and off the planes quickly and you pull away from the gate and you improve your on-time performance. And people care about on-time performance, right? But when you have something really unusual happen, like a passenger not agreeing with the program of being moved off an airplane, that requires a different approach and a different thought process. And that's not in the handbook. Mm-hmm. Handbooks can't cover everything.
How quickly should a leader respond, or who should be there? How should that come forth? And of course, it's case by case, but what goes through your mind when your phone rings? Does your phone ring in the middle of the night?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So when that happens?
Well,
What are the questions you're asking?
Well, I want to get my facts straight. I want to find out what happened. I don't want to fly off the handle, but by the same token, we're living in a world where everything's happening at the speed of light or the speed of a social media posting. And so you don't want to leave things hanging out there either. But I do think it's more incumbent on the business or the business executive to get their facts right. It's okay for, you know, at Bob372 to get something wrong. But it's totally different for
throwing at Bob under the bus.
Yeah. He's no good, that guy. It's totally different for, you know, United Airlines or Kentucky Fried Chicken to get it wrong.
Right.
So let's marshal the facts as quickly as possible. In some ways, things are totally different than when I first started doing this years ago. And in some ways, it's the same,
right.
Which is I still believe that even though there have been a few shifts to the paradigm in the current political era, America still appreciates an apology tour if you are authentic about it and if you're going to do something about it.
Right.
And that's, you got to have both prongs,
yes.
I think. You can't just say, hey, I screwed up and I'm going to go back and still use bad chicken or still go back
right.
and beat up passengers. Now, you know, they want to see you take, they want to see you do something about
yeah.
it. And I think you need to move quickly. I think you need to try to acknowledge, depending on how complicated the problem is, if it's someone posting something inappropriate or saying something inappropriate, you can move on that pretty quickly, right? Like that's an apology, that's firing somebody or sending them for re-education. You had mentioned when we were talking about doing this podcast, the whole story with Starbucks
mm-hmm.
and the way a few years ago a customer was treated, a person of color who was arrested for just trying to use the washroom. Starbucks responded to that in a textbook way, both old school and new school.
Right.
You know, they got the CEO and then the chairman, and then they both got out there, national media and
right.
social media, and apologized and said, this is not our way. And then they did something about it. And this is what I admire, because it took a financial hit. It took a commitment. But they did, as I recall, a national sort of stand down for part of the day. We're not going to sell coffee. We're all going to get retrained and learn about sensitivity and learn the proper way to treat our customers. And that was actually doing something substantive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, years ago, I had a client that had two industrial accidents in the same day. And without even consulting me, the CEO just shut the operation down for a day and did a nationwide teleconference with all of his employees about, you know, measuring twice and cutting once and making sure that everything is, you know, we're following the rules of safety
right.
for our protection as much as the community we serve. That takes a big commitment to actually live up to your words in your tweet or in your statement. So in many ways, that's the same today with social media as it was when we did things by fax.
Yeah, right.
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 But it takes next steps. Now I'm stunned still today to see how slow some organizations are to respond to problems.
Yeah, shocking.
Boeing, for example.
Yeah. Yes.
So Boeing has two plane crashes with the 737 MAX, and these aircraft had a new system that was supposed to be for safety, but the pilots didn't know how to work it. And it was a stall prevention system. So two horrible plane crashes, right? Like that's totally
right.
redundant. And I worked in the aviation industry early on in my career. I mean, that is the worst case scenario. And there's a textbook to how to approach it. The airlines made the best of it. Boeing, in its initial steps, made the best of it. And then they said nothing for weeks and weeks while more and more evidence indicated that this
right.
new system had something to do with it. And I defended Boeing. I got called by a reporter probably about a week into it. And I said, look, Should they have responded faster? Yes. But they have a great record for safety, and I'm sure they're doing everything they can to make their aircraft more safe. I just wish that they would communicate it a little bit better.
Right.
Well, they wound up sort of kicking and screaming to grounding their fleet, which they probably should have done at the outset, which is to say, until we know exactly what the problem is, we need to self-ground. Now, that would have taken a financial hit, but they suffered a financial hit anyway.
Yes.
And several months into it, those planes are still not back in the air. They've run into some other issues as regulators take a look at what they're doing. And just in September, so this is 7 months after their initial problems, the board of directors announced a new safety approach, and they reorganized the company, and they restated their commitment to safety, all of which culturally existed at Boeing for decades.
Right.
But why did it take 7 months to do that? And I don't understand that. And I hopefully there's not a lot of Boeing employees listening to your podcast because they'll be mad at me, because it's a great company and they've done great things. Why do you not communicate it? And sometimes the C-suites, especially of major multinationals like Boeing, they're uncomfortable with the news media, there's trust issues there. They're uncomfortable with social media, there's trust issues there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, because you've had loss of life, the legal departments get involved. But everybody suffers from a paralysis of analysis. And you've got to look further down the pike. We want Boeing to get through these challenges. We've got to look down the road and make sure that everyone knows that how we handled this crisis is a statement of who we are, too. Things go wrong.
Right.
I've sort of made a business based on it. But things go wrong. And it's just, do you have the capacity built up to respond to it?
Right. Sounds like the heavy lifting happens before the event.
It really does.
And people don't think to call in PR often until the event, right?
Or what happens a lot is companies will fire their agencies. That must have been the problem.
We're not
telling our story the right way. But you have to do things operationally.
Yeah.
And I've been preaching this for decades. And look, sometimes my clients don't want to hear it and don't agree with it and don't listen to it. But sometimes they do. You have to put the operational effort behind just the words. You can't just message your way out of most problems.
Right.
You have to change what you're doing somehow, or address what went wrong, or come up with a new procedure, or come up with a new protection so that everyone knows we get it.
Right.
We're now mindful of this problem, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure this problem doesn't happen again. You can't probably do that with all problems. When you make airplanes, you expect at some point that something bad could happen, right?
With any business, really.
Yeah, and there's a tremendous safety record in aviation, but you still have to think about that. I don't know that anyone could have come up with the specific facts that took place for that one, but still, you need to understand how quickly word spreads today and how quickly people come up with their own determinations and decisions about who you are and what you stand for. Conversely, and what a lot of CEOs count on, is the short memory that people have. And something else bad will capture our attention next week. And sometimes that's what gets people by.
You know, you bring up a good point, and that is in the operational effort to do something about it. I think what a lot of leaders or organizations forget, especially the larger ones, is that doing something about it requires an ongoing communication, especially on social, where it's very snackable, small bits of information. And I think some of the old guard believes that the only time you communicate is when you have a big milestone met. So when you're doing something operationally, like your Boeing example, maybe they felt, in their world, we've moved, now 6 months later, we're actually doing something, whereas social media should have been seeing something every day, even if it's the smallest little effort of something that's changing. You know, this part is being ordered or that is being looked at, and something that can be updated in a very small way throughout to let people continue to remember that it hasn't died, it hasn't gone away, it didn't just get forgotten and buried.
Right.
I think that would.
I think that's an excellent point. That's why you're the brand expert. You know, the thing I often tell clients when they've got a problem is perfection can be the enemy of success, and if you wait for the perfect solution, you've left a vacuum out there in the meantime for people to speculate.
Right. And what happens in the vacuum?
Bad things almost always happen in the vacuum.
So the vacuum is your enemy. Vacuum, is that what you're saying?
The vacuum is your enemy.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when something bad happens, most people are caught off guard and don't know how to respond. And it's not like it's a desirable place to be. It's a lot easier to hide or deliberate. So speaking of that, social channels. So everybody's got social channels now. Disaster strikes. How do you manage your social channels? You ever shut them down?
You know, in the old days when I worked in radio news, when I was a boy reporter, if there was an incident involving a plane crash, for example, all of the airline commercials were pulled off the air.
Oh, really?
And today, I think the airlines, if they were really thinking through the tools available to them, they would double down on social and really use that as a way to let people know in progress how you're
right.
responding. So I think it's actually a great tool. I would say that it should be the exception, not the rule, to shut down your social channels.
Yeah, I think a lot of leaders are afraid of the haters and the activists, and they don't want everybody to see that. So they're inclined to like have that be their greatest fear. What's your advice to anyone who thinks that?
I think you need to have a sense of perspective. If you are a CEO and you're spending all of your time looking at Twitter while you're going through a crisis, you're probably not making the best use of your time. And occasionally, we've worked with people who get caught up in that, and it's easy to do. It's human nature. But you want to look at the totality of things. Use social media as a way to proactively get your word out. It's another communications platform for you to get your word out about how you're responding to a problem. But don't get sucked into the negativity that exists, because that's the negative voices outnumber the positive voices, because the positive voices have better things to do, I think, sometimes. So it's a place where you can learn how you're doing. You could learn how you're being perceived, and you can tweak your responses accordingly, but don't get so caught up in it, right? And if someone's going to get caught up in it, it should be your digital media director who's, you know, sort of slugging it out on an hour-by-hour basis.
So how do you advise someone who is feeling like, if I go out on social and start apologizing all over the place and, you know, coming up with my plan and really forwardly communicating and outwardly communicating, you know, a mea culpa, the fear often then becomes, well, am I just kind of fueling the fire here? What if there's people who didn't know and now they're hearing it from me? Like, where's the balance between you want to address the problem, but you don't want to build awareness about the problem?
Right. I think that most of the time common sense tells you that.
Yeah.
So if anybody in the vaping industry didn't think they had a problem,
right,
you know, they were quickly disabused of that, right?
Right.
So once it gets to a certain critical mass, whether it's social media or calls from the legacy news media or complaints on your consumer hotline, you can figure out with a little common sense that you have something you need to address. You need to be taking a hard look at what's going on in the world around you on a regular basis mm-hmm. anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always thought that a CEO, you know, should spend about 50 to 60% of their time outwardly focused and thinking about how their business or their brand or their image is playing and what's going on in the world that might impact you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that ratio may even be higher today.
Yeah, possibly. I recently read, I came across this Harvard Business Review article.
Well, aren't you fancy?
And it was this article around this survey that was taken, 400,000 customer service related tweets in two different industries, airlines and wireless, two industries that people tend to tweet about. So they surveyed the people who made these tweets and then surveyed them again 6 months later, and people who had tweeted good things and bad things. It was quite interesting. I'm curious about your perspective on this. If a person, what it showed was that if a person got a response to a positive comment, so let's say they tweeted something positive, if they got a response to the positive comment, those were the people that were most willing to pay more in the future if they were thanked for that positive comment. In fact, if their name was in there in the response. So if a company tweeted back a response, a thank you to their comment, and they included their name, these people were going to, on average, pay $14 more 6 months later for an airline ticket, but still loyal and paying more. Whereas if there was no name in the reply, they were not going to pay any more. So there's all these ways to connect with people on a human level. But what was quite interesting was the speed of connection. So the speed was where the real value accrued. So within the airline industry, within 5 minutes, if you respond to a tweet within 5 minutes, customers would pay $20 more for that airline than a competitor in the future. But if you waited 20 whole minutes to reply, the customer would only pay $3 more. So it's not just this need to be responsive, but the need to be quick in
that
the response. That does add up, doesn't it? So anyway, I just thought that was pretty interesting. But I think what it gets to is this issue that by connecting with people in a both positive and responding to a negative comment has a positive effect, and that permanence was also demonstrated in this survey, because 6 months later, anyone who got a reply was more permanently loyal and had maintained that higher level of loyalty or willingness to pay more.
Well, people like to be listened to. I think that's always been the case. And what the speed data that you cited is really interesting, but I guess that makes sense too. You're still, if you're mad at your airline,
right,
if you're at the airport or if you're at your desk, you took a special step to reach into your pocket, pull open the social media platform of choice, and, you know, take the time to complain about your airline or to say something to your airline. That immediate feedback shows, hey, I'm listening. I have a little bit of power.
Yeah.
That's
Oh, my God. They wrote me back right away. You suddenly have a change of heart.
Conversely, I'm if Harvard ever did a similar research about the cable company, I'm sure they wouldn't have that response.
No.
But people like to be listened to. It's a real challenge for these brands that have so many customers and so many consumers who could be in a stressful situation like that, to really be on top of all of it.
Yeah.
And so that's a challenge too. Think about how many United Airlines complaints come in, or American Airlines or Delta. We don't want to single one of them out on a daily basis. Some, you know, very few of them may be truly legit, but you've got to stay on top of a lot.
Well, it's a choice a company has to make if they're going to be responsive, because they really have to staff up for it. So, I guess in closing, let's think about the future of leadership. We're broadcasting here from 1871, Chicago's entrepreneurial hub, and we have a lot of emerging leaders coming out of here, or maybe even in business schools. We had talked about, you know, younger students that are in business schools today. What do you think about young leaders, you know, in the time that you've done this, you know, the difference between maybe a more, we talked a bit about the established leaders, but how do the young leaders approach this, and what do you observe in that regard?
That's a great question. I think younger leaders understand the power of communication for the most part.
Yeah.
But I don't think our business schools are really getting that across and truly inculcating and educating young leaders on how to respond when things don't go according to plan.
Right.
So young leaders certainly know how to blow their own horn about their innovation or their disruption, right? The legacy media and social media is filled with that every day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Nicoles and Dennises of the world should be on the faculty of some of these business schools explaining to them how they also have to think through and live the brand and put a premium on communication when things don't go well.
Right.
And the, you know, the fail fast mentality is great in terms of an entrepreneur being able to kind of shake off a problem, but you're still leaving behind you vendors who didn't get paid or customers who had an unsatisfactory experience. And so you carry that with you too.
That's right.
And sometimes that doesn't go well. You know, we've certainly seen with some founders who've gotten to that next level of success, take Uber, where they're not ready to make that switch from a disruptive culture to being responsible to their community, responsible to society, and responsible to the people whose lives they're changing or causing problems for.
Right.
And misconduct of employees and misconduct of the founder.
Yeah.
So it takes some grounding and some coaching to understand that things aren't always going to go according to plan. And you have to think about what you're going to do in that moment, because it can be a great opportunity to turn that into a golden moment.
Right. Well, thank you, Dennis, on that note. I think it might be appropriate to mention that, as I mentioned, Free Range Brands podcasts out of 1871, and interesting, 1871, is branded because of one of Chicago's greatest historical crises, and
that's
right. is the Chicago Fire. And so the idea of branding 1871 is about the collective brains and passion that celebrate the innovation of the engineers, architects, and inventors who rose to the occasion to shape the city we live in. So if you think about what you just said, meaning it may not be a crisis, it may be an opportunity. Here we sit today, you know, and despite the world we live in, how we handle a crisis is as relevant today as maybe it was 140 years ago after the Great Chicago Fire.
And Mrs. O'Leary was innocent. It was peg leg.
But it wasn't peg leg. It was a meteor shower.
All right, we'll go with that.
Well, we're going to have to spin that one at another time. Thank you, Dennis.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank everyone for listening in and joining us on Free Range Brands. I especially want to thank Dennis Culleton for sharing his insights with us. You can find the link to Dennis's website in our show notes. Please join us next time when we talk to Steve Jones, the former Global Chief Marketing Officer of Coca-Cola and the powerhouse behind the great success of Fairlife Ultra-Filtered Milk, a category creator and breakout sensation. Steve shares with us one of the most unique and exciting perspectives on modern leadership and innovation. So whether you're building a global brand or a local one, whether you're at the top of a corporate food chain or are building your own empire, you won't want to miss this one. You can subscribe to this podcast at freerangepartners.com, and you'll be notified when it's available. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and rate us or share with a colleague. Until then, see you on the Free Range.